Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Figuring It Out podcast. Today's episode was recorded back in June of 2024, and listening now in July 2024, it may sound like we glossed over some really big things, like an attempted assassination or Joe Biden dropping out of the race and endorsing Kamala Harris to run instead. But this episode ultimately is not dependent on a time period or certain political events to have taken place. And so while we don't address those things because they hadn't happened as of the recording of this episode is still sadly very relevant to the culture at hand. Political discourse in America and frankly around the world is a very difficult topic to bring up without bringing heat from either side of the political aisle. And that's exactly the point. Political discourse is not in a great place, and it's only gotten worse with the advent of social media and polarized messaging on both sides of the mainstream media. And so today's episode is one where we want to look beyond the candidates themselves and look at the type of discourse that's happening about politics in general all over the country. This episode is a really important one, and I hope it's one that people will listen to with an open mind. With that said, let's get into today's episode of Figuring It Out.
You were raised to believe the world was black and white. But what if it isn't? What if the rigid belief system you have never questioned is wrong? What if the world is actually a lot more gray? This show is for the seekers, the explorers, those brave enough to step outside of certainty and question everything. Join your hosts as they sit across from the world's leading thought leaders, visionaries, religious gurus, entrepreneurs, philosophers, and more to tackle difficult topics. You don't need all the answers to find meaning in life, but you should be free to ask all the questions. This is Figuring It Out.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Figuring It Out podcast. Before we jump in, we got a cheers real quick. Some magic cheers. Mind. Get the juices flowing. Literally.
This episode is going to be juicy, so... You know what's funny is when we all take a sip at the same time and no one's talking and it's just
a lot of slurps and gurgles. That's a podcast name right there. Slurps and gurgles.
Hold on. I'll say anything else. Hold on.
You just haven't taken it?
Because I'm going to choke on it.
Please don't spit just that. One.
Oh my
Eric,
god!
Oh my gosh!
Get on video. Did you just barf out magic mind all over the floor? Jesus Christ!
You said it.
Okay.
It's because I can hear you in my ear.
I'm so glad we have that recorded. That's a clip. Clip it.
I apologize for what just happened. We had a technical difficulty.
Okay.
And I'm so sorry about your bearskin rug right here. I'm so sorry for doing that. Could you imagine if you had like one throw rug in the whole room and it was right there? That would have been really funny.
It would just be green now.
Oh, man. That was emotional. That was an emotional roller coaster.
And we're just kidding. I'm glad that that happened.
Click-through rates better go high. That's going in the thumbnail.
That's going to be a great one for Magic Mind.
The state. Well, that's actually a great thumbnail. The state of politics today. And it's just me puking and just green.
You can just send that as a threat. That'll be your next ad for Magic Mind if they don't give you more free Magic Mind.
Sorry, talking about politics. Let's not talk about threats. No. Okay.
Get flagged. I just meant that that would make them want to give you more.
Or
post one about how gross
it
is.
I love it.
Yeah. It's so good, you have to spit it out
all over.
That was a significant amount of liquid for how small the bottle is.
Yeah, and it looks so gross being green like that.
This is an episode we're not drinking, and this is already happening. So anyway, what have you guys been reading, watching, listening to lately?
In today's episode, we're going to talk about the potential dangers of edutainment and what's often missing from public discourse.
I didn't realize we didn't even get to the topic. That went off the rails.
Yeah. All right, reading, watching, listening to. Eric?
Okay. You hate going first. And you,
well, sometimes you got to go first.
I'm so excited today.
Okay. I was going to say, because you have a bunch of stuff right now.
And let me think. Okay. I didn't get the full bottle of Magic Mind. Yeah. This is me without Magic Mind. As I was thinking about writing this down, and as I was watching the movie and knew I was going to talk about it, I knew that Jackie's eyes were going to glaze over the minute I started discussing it. Mm. So I was watching the 1929 French silent film.
Okay, I'm going to answer some emails while you go over this.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense. That's actually relevant to today's topic. called The Passion of Joan of Arc. And it's one of the movies that's been on my list forever because, like, in every cinephile list or like movies you need to watch before you die, it's on there. Okay. And I love silent movies.
How long was the movie?
80 minutes. That's like an hour and silent. It's like an hour and 20 minutes.
I'm out.
But it's silent. But here's the thing. I love silent movies. Like, one of my favorite actors ever is Buster Keaton.
Is he just silent film?
Brilliant. He transitioned, but he did like four talking movies and they weren't very good. He's so watchable and entertaining, and the movies fly by. And there's some silent movies on lists, especially dramas, that tend to be, oh, this is a movie about a trial that's 80 minutes long and there's no dialogue. That's going to be rough. And so, like, even me, who's a hardened cinephile, was like, I'll keep scooting it back. And so I finally watched it, and it's legitimately one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life. And sincerely, and it's tense. It's very like harrowing, heavy, but the whole movie is essentially this trial between Joan of Arc and the, like, all of the church leaders that are basically like, you need to admit that you didn't hear from God. Like, she's claiming, I'm a messenger sent from God. I'm supposed to lead our country to victory in battle. And I have all these thoughts. And they're basically saying, like, you're hearing the voice of Satan. And so it's a lot of interesting written dialogue, obviously, like all the dialogue that they show, where they're saying, hey, the church is more learned than you. The leaders in the church, the church leaders are wiser than you. And her argument is, God is wiser still, and I'm talking to him. And so it's a fascinating kind of look at, like, two people with very steadfast beliefs contradicting each other. And she has all of the weight of the establishment that has the power to execute her, which they ultimately do. Spoiler, that's the historical story. Yeah. But, you know, she stands her ground. It's a really powerful movie. I'll probably have more to say about it in like 2-3 weeks, because I've just watched it and was like digesting, like, what do I even think about that? Like, there's so many layers of, like, was she crazy? You know, like, were they wrong? Like, were they right to not believe this person that says they're here? Like, but it's a really beautiful movie. And legitimately, like, even if you're not a silent film person, it's well worth watching. Hmm. So put it on your list, Jackie.
I'll take your word for it.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah, I'll think about
it. Just have to smoke some weed and watch it.
That would be a very scary experience.
Even more so.
It's a very tense movie, too. I was surprised for 1929, how graphic the end, because it's pre-code. So, like, before they started censoring movies. So, like, they keep cutting back to her, like, on the stake burning. I was like, holy shit. Like, because the 50s,
and they actually started, burned people at the stake back then, too.
Not in the 1920s, to be clear. but it was one of those things that
I'm saying, like, just in silent films, there weren't a lot of parameters around safety regarding filming movies. Yeah. It was basically just people died during film production.
It was one of those things, though, where I was like, it's interesting seeing, like, how much tension and just, it feels ahead of its time in terms of, like, pacing and cinematography. Like, it's a really, really beautiful movie. So anyway, that was the one I watched. It's for those that are interested in conversation about, like, religion and, like, historical stuff like that too. It's pretty fascinating. From what I've read, is pretty accurate to the actual trial itself. So yeah, Jackie,
I can't wait
to hear what you think next week. That's your homework.
Yep.
Where would I even watch that?
HBO Max.
Max. Really?
I was going to say,
they have Google it. HBO Max has a bunch of, like, classic, like Turner Classic Movies. They have a hub for Turner Classic Movies. You've never seen, it's a dusty corner of your HBO Max, but
never probably looked there. All right. I read Extreme Ownership and I liked it a lot. I think that I like that it covers, I don't know, something that I have tried to be better at in my life. And I think especially leaving religion and leaving like that culture the way it was, I think it was easy for me a lot of times to just blame a lot of things on that. And so I think it helped me just to take extreme ownership in that sense too, of just making sure that I'm owning at the end of the day. I know we've talked about it a lot on this, but at the end of the day, at what point does it come to where like you have to be responsible for your future kind of thing? And I feel like that book really helps a lot with that side of it. But yeah, it's a really good book.
Jocko Willink.
All right. So this is still coming from the almanac of Naval Ravikant.
Jesus.
Oh, yay. Man, this has been so interesting for me today.
And
you know,
wait, can I just say something? So here's behind the scenes. I've been releasing these in a weird order of recording. Yeah. So I had to edit you mentioning that you'd already been talking about it. But just so people know, this is week three of you talking about this book.
No.
Yes.
No.
It's week two.
Yes. No, it's week two. Three. No, it's week three. Because you talked about it. You talked about it. And then you said, on the next one, you said, I'm also doing that, but I'm doing this. So you referenced, and because we joked about it and said, oh, we'd love to hear more.
Oh,
but right. I cut that out, even though it was funny that we made fun of you.
Why'd you cut it out?
Because we released that one first before the one where you talked about it. So it didn't make sense.
Oh, I see.
It was a long thing. But anyway, all that to say, this you still have more to say.
This
about
is the
it.
Saga of Naval Ravikant.
Yes.
Yes, I do. I thought this was really good. He talks about luck, and this is something that I've thought about a lot because I've interviewed a lot of successful people on my show, and there seems to always be like a combination. Like, you know, that's why I like the book The Alchemist as well. Seems to be like an alchemy.
We looked at each other like, you said, that's why I love The Alchemist as well, and we both looked at each other like, that's another Travis book.
Why is that? I don't understand. Why is that a Travis book?
Because like, go ahead.
No, I really want to hear. Why are you laughing right thing. Now? Why are you laughing?
Because here's the thing.
What's like, funny?
Here's the thing. Most things.
She's laughing for nothing.
It's funny because like, usually people go like, I'm reading this book on extreme ownership called Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. And then like, I'll be like, I watched a movie about Joan of Arc. It's all this. And then you'll be like, I was powerlifting at the gym and I was listening to this book called The Alchemist. And you're like, that could be about anything.
We're just jealous of how cool you
but
are.
But here's the thing. It's just you. Here,
and
wait.
It's
wait.
Laughable.
No. It's not laughable. It's funny.
I'm laughing at the dynamic. It's funny. It's hilarious.
It's funny in the way that you like, we're such stereotypes of ourselves at this point to where when I come to the table and say, I'm watching this 1920 silent film that neither of you will ever watch.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I was reading The Alchemist. And I took a break from the almanac
and I'm like,
to read
The
Alchemist.
Kardashians.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
we talked a lot about Kim on the last episode we recorded.
I remember.
I didn't realize
till
we were editing.
To
I was
add
like,
to that.
This is good.
I was just sitting there.
We're just literally glazing up Kim for like an hour. I'm a big fan though.
I know, me too.
Okay, full circle.
Okay, full circle.
I think Kim would agree with me that luck is involved in success, no matter how you slice it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in his book and his collections of writings, he talks about that there's four different ways to get lucky, and not like that, because I know it's what you're thinking. Filthy mind Jackie over here.
There's 69 ways to get lucky. Hey.
Okay, so four ways that he gives is number one, hope luck finds you. Number two, hustle until you stumble into it. Number three, prepare the mind and be sensitive to chances that others miss. And number four, become the best at what you do. Refine what you do until this is true. An opportunity will seek you out and then luck becomes your destiny.
That's good. That
is and
good.
He says, and obviously number four is the one that he's recommending. And I really like the piece where he says, become the best at what you do and then refine what you do until this is true. And it's kind of the same theory as kind of the blue ocean strategy, which is, you know, become the best at what you do. Yes. But also if you're trying to become the best at marketing, that's going to be really hard because there's millions of people that are also like pursuing that craft. And so what he's saying is like, refine what you do until you are the best at it. Doesn't necessarily mean that like you're going to be the best marketer, but it's like, what's the other thing that you can bring to the table that other marketers aren't thinking about?
Right.
Like, can you skill stack? And with this unique skill set that you bring, that's based on your unique ability, the things that you not only enjoy doing, but the things that you have maybe a natural proclivity to being good at, like these types of things. If you can combine all that into one thing, then you can become the best at what you do. So continue to refine that until you are the best at what you do, because nobody else can do what you do because it's so unique. And then opportunity will come to you, and then luck becomes your destiny. And that's when he says, this is when luck starts becoming so deterministic that it stops being luck. The definition starts fading from luck to destiny. To summarize this fourth type, build your character in a certain way so that your character becomes your destiny. And then he goes into a bunch of other stuff that I won't just read verbatim. There's a couple of things in here that I wanted to go over. If you're a trusted, reliable, high integrity, long-term thinking deal maker, then other people will want to do deals, but don't know when, how to do them in a trustworthy manner with strangers, they will literally approach you and give you a cut of the deal just because of the integrity and reputation you've built up. And then think about Warren Buffett getting deals just because of his reputation. Your character and reputation are things that you can build, which will let you take advantage of opportunities that other people may characterize as lucky, but you know it wasn't luck. You're in a long-term game. It seems like everyone, and in that game, everyone is making each other rich. In a short-term game, it seems like everyone's making themselves rich. In a long-term game, it's a positive sum. We're baking the pie together and trying to make the pie as big as possible. In a short-term game, we're cutting up the pie. So apply specific knowledge, your unique skill with leverage, and eventually you'll get the results that you deserve. And I thought it was a really great characterization of luck because, like I said, there's no denying that luck plays a role in especially outsized success. When you look at like the nth degree of examples of the Zuckerbergs and different people,
it's like you don't work your way to being a billionaire, basically.
Yeah. In a lot of senses. Yeah. I think maybe some of them are more direct paths to billionaires, right? Like hedge funds or whatever, like, you know, private equity, stuff like that is a little bit more like a more duplicatable path, but you know, inventing Facebook.
There's
alchemy that's involved there. Right. It's a mixture of a lot of things, right? At the best time possible, mix in some luck and it explodes and it's, you know, creates Zuckerberg and Meta and everything's come out of that. You know, Elon Musk is another great example.
Or Amazon. But, yeah. All those.
Yeah. Amazon.
Big names we think about.
I love the way that he phrased it with the, you know, the best way to get lucky is become the best at what you do, refine what you do until this is true. Opportunity will seek you out. And then it stops being luck. Luck becomes your destiny. It's so deterministic at that point that it stops being luck. Like, and you have the ability to affect the way that luck affects you and comes into your life. I thought it was really a valuable way to say it. So,
And two things that came to mind. One thing that I find encouragement in a lot, because like the idea of, oh, I want to be the best at some point, where it's like, that can feel unattainable. And it probably is.
Yeah.
Like to be the best, you know, at a certain level, again, there's some luck, there's gene, like whatever the field is, there's some level of like the access to capital, like all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I've realized in my life that's encouraged me is that you, as you're pursuing going to the best, like the higher you go, the less people there are competing at that level. So it's like marketing, for example, it's like when you're, hey, I'm going to fly out and shoot a video, you know, and I'll do it for free. Mm-hmm. That pool is huge. Mm-hmm. And you will never, like, once you get to the level where it's like, oh, I know how to actually adjust the white balance on my camera. You eliminate a lot of guys that are doing that.
Right.
You know, like, and tier after tier, or like, I know how to create a, you know, Instagram reel. Oh, now I know what kind of hooks work. And like, you start eliminating other people and your circle gets smaller. And even if you're like the 2000th best at something, which is still high, like the opportunities are huge. Yeah. And the last thing I was going to say, it's funny because you said getting lucky, but the business relationship side, I think, is a lot like sex in terms of.
Okay.
Okay. Explain more, please.
If you want to get to the top. the way that I look at sex. Okay.
Okay.
Like, where the hell are you going? The way that I look at
sex. I'm interested.
The way that I look at sex is, okay, in sex, both people want to climax. That's the goal of sex, right?
Yes.
I mean, I thought it was to procreate, but
whatever. So both people want to climax. So if both people are only focused on themselves mm-hmm. climaxing, the other person probably won't. Especially, well, fair. If you're a guy, probably will.
Yeah.
but it's the reason, like, there's a huge, it's literally called the orgasm gap. Like, women tend to not, because guys are focused on themselves.
Yeah.
I think in business, a lot of times people are like, how do I make the most money in every transaction? How do I take the most of this deal? How do I take the most out of this deal? And I think if your goal is how do I give the other person the most possible pleasure and they're doing the same? You guys are both going to have a good time. Yeah. I think in business, if it's like, how do I make this work the best for them and they're doing the same for you?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have a really good partnership. It's the Adam Grant thing. Yeah. It's like,
that's the guy that Jackie told me
about. Yeah. Thank you, Jackie, for letting us know. But it's one of those things I always look at is like, sometimes there's deals that in the short term aren't going to do well for you. But in the long term, in your relationship, any type, if you're giving everything you have to them, And that's the key. You're finding someone who's also willing to do that.
Yeah.
Vice versa.
Right.
You end up in a really good spot. So it's kind of like sex in that way.
Okay.
That's the, I'm not advising mixing the two.
Okay.
What it sounded like in the beginning, but
to provide clarity.
All right.
That was good. That was good. All right. Main topic. Eric, why don't you kick us off on this?
Yeah. I wrote a lot down, but okay. I'll kind of give a 10,000 foot view. So we're recording this episode on the back of the first debate between Biden and Trump. Mm-hmm. I do not want to talk about the debate between Biden and Trump, and nobody wants to listen about the debate between Biden and Trump. So I don't know when this will release. It's really irrelevant to like what the substance of that debate was or lack thereof, but really just, I skipped the debate completely. I don't know if you guys watched it.
We skipped
just
it.
Clips afterwards.
Yeah. I kind of found myself, I feel like in the last election, I was very much depressed by like, these are the options. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this year I find myself kind of depressed again in terms of like the state of conversation around that. There's such an annoying type of discourse happening. And all of this, as I was thinking about it, brought to mind a book I read a couple years ago, which is called Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman. He's an author. He was a cultural critic, and he was a, what's the title that they gave him? A media theorist, okay. Which is like a very fancy name for, I look at things and talk about them.
Right.
But he wrote a book called Amusing Ourselves to Death in 1985. And in the book, he kind of lays out the two versions of the dystopian future was George Orwell's 1984, which is that the powers that be are going to restrict our access to everything. Like, book burnings, you know, the Nazi party basically. And then there's Huxley, who wrote A Brave New World. And the premise of that book was that we're going to be so distracted that people can do whatever they want and we won't even notice it. And he basically proposed in the foreword, which I might record later and insert into this, he basically proposed that Huxley is the one that's right. Like, we're going to be so obsessed with distraction and meaninglessness and entertainment that we're not going to be able to know what's important and what's not. And all that to say, in his book, one of the stories that stood out to me the most was he talks about a debate that took place between Abraham Lincoln and Stephen A. Douglas. And this is before they were even officially running for president of the United States. Mm-hmm. But he describes that the debate went like this. Douglas spoke for 1 hour, just straight for an hour. Lincoln got up and spoke for an hour and a half, giving his response and rebuttal to him. And he marveled at the ability of the audience to sit through 2.5 hours of just dry conversation. Yeah. And he basically said, what audience today would be able to do that and put that much thought into who they're voting for? And it stuck with me. And the other piece of the book, and then I'll kind of open this up, but the other piece of the book he talks about is that basically the news, political debates and things stopped being educational and stopped being helpful when we started adding music. Like, it became entertainment at that point. Mm-hmm. And it affected how we view information and it affected how information was delivered. And all of that now, like reading that in 1985 and looking at political discourse now or religious discourse now, like, I keep going back and thinking like, we're drifting further and further from any real meaningful discussion about stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll I'll kind of open up initial thoughts, but I have a clip from him that I think is interesting.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, to be fair to current audiences, there also like weren't that many options of what to give your attention to in 1858. So like the fact that there was just like a thing is happening, the whole town would just be like, let's go to the one thing that's happening. Like instead of just sit in our cottage sewing this evening or whatever.
You kind know? Of the point. No.
Yeah, sure. Like, sure.
There's so much.
Right. Right. But yeah, to play devil's advocate for the other side, it's like, it's not just the fact that like we don't have interest in those things. It's just that there is
so many,
literally hundreds of thousands, you know, really millions of options of where we can give our attention.
Right.
That don't require, you know, sitting through 2.5 hours of political discourse from two people that aren't even presidential candidates. But I do think some of that's coming back, and you know, maybe this is patting ourselves on the back a little bit, but I think podcasts have a lot to do with it.
I was just about to say,
because it's getting back to that type of a thing. Like praise our Lord and Savior Joe Rogan more, but he did open that up in a lot of ways, you know, because most people thought he was crazy when he started the show. It was like, bro, you're doing 3.5 hour interviews. This is not going to work. Like, you have to have a show structure here if you want people to listen. And he's like, I frankly don't care if people listen.
Yeah. What's your attention these long, every 5 minutes? Yeah.
Like, I want to have these conversations, and I'm going to do it exactly how I want to do it. And then it turns out people do like that.
Yeah.
It turns out that people can listen to a conversation for 4 hours
and now desire that,
and now actually are optimizing for it and want that to be like, that's what I think it's so interesting that, RFK wasn't allowed in the debates and, you know, all that stuff. It's one of those things that just, it just seems like so obvious that the powers that be just want things to be the way that they are, and they don't want a disruption or whatever. Cause it's just like, I don't understand why you can't let somebody in who's a serious candidate into a debate. Yeah. Why is that crazy? You know what I mean? But he's doing what the other guys aren't willing to do, which is like going down and sitting with interviewers and having really long form discussions where they're able to parse through really difficult topics and actually give him a chance to answer instead of this like combative, verbal warfare format.
Who has the best soundbite?
Right. Know? That's meant to be clipped and short form. They actually give him a chance to be like, hey, you seem to have switched your position on abortion or whatever.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that transition. What happened to you? And he can take 12 minutes and answer that question because it is a question that requires something more than a 24-second soundbite. I do think that we're kind of getting a little bit back to that, but overall agree that like when you start mixing the two things, that's why we have the candidates that we have. It's we're optimizing for entertainment and not for actual leadership.
Right. Well it's the I appreciate the long form conversation because I think it is something that it's actually a trend now on TikTok with Gen Z kids. Like that blew my mind when you did the interview with Nicole Wingard and she was like, she's 24, which is 5 years younger than me. And, which again, I was like, shit, I thought we were peers. I mean, I'm 5 years older than you. But anyway, Gen Z kind of has this term and joke that they've been throwing out, which is like brain rot. And like, that's been, I don't know if you've seen all the memes about that. You're a little too old to, I kind of caught this, but, me and my brother-in-law, who's 18, joke about this all the time because I'll say something like a trendy word or something. And he's like, dude, you're so brain rotted. And like, they'll literally say that for the meme is basically like kids on TikTok will be like, oh, that's so skibbity. Or they'll like reference like 30 things that are like all just TikTok terms from like 30-second memes.
Right.
And so they'll literally say like, your brain is rotted. And I think it's funny, but I think also Gen Z has their finger on the pulse of a real thing that's happening, which is the millennial generation and like the initial Facebook, Instagram, TikTok kind of realm is so soundbite focused and so memeable moments and my face when they say this,
yeah,
like there's no substance to any content. And I think now what you mentioned is the pendulum is swinging to where's the, like every clip we post, where's the full context? It needs more context. I want to know more. Yeah. I don't think that was really happening 2 years ago, even. Yeah. I think people are seeing it and now craving more detail, more depth, except for in things that I think really matter, like politics, religion. Then we rest on whose guy can beat up whose guy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know,
because nobody knows. That's the
like
problem.
Apologetics.
Because nobody knows.
Yeah.
So that's the thing is like, it's like a trial by combat. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, well, I am, you know, declare trial by combat, but I don't know everything about this topic. So I name Ben Shapiro as my, my champion, who's going to fight my verbal battle for me. Yeah. And the other side's like, well, I don't know everything about that. So I name, you know, whatever, Anna Kasparian or whatever, you know what I mean? And they're going to debate and then whoever wins, that's a win for our side. And it's
and
like,
only my side's going to win.
But that's not
I've already decided.
You working out what you think. Like that's you just throwing it out to people who you perceive to be smarter than you on these topics. And you're just claiming that identity. You're not actually giving a shit about figuring it out for yourself.
Or it's personality driven, you know, like the Trump. Well, literally I almost took a screenshot of it. I'm sure I can go find it again because it's on the internet, but I believe it was CNN who hosted the debate last night. But even when you see the ads for it, it's Biden and Trump with like the big debate. It's like a UFC. Like if they weren't in suits and they weren't like 100 years old, you'd be like, this is a UFC fight.
Because CNN, like a presidential debate like that should not be owned by a media company.
Right.
That's a private media company or publicly traded, but it's a company. It's not a government institution.
Right.
Like this should be on C-SPAN. It should have been streamed across. Like, I saw a Cigar. What's that guy's name? You know what I'm talking about? He does like political commentating and stuff, but like mostly from a neutral third party perspective. Him and his co-host were on Rogan a couple of times. E Cigar, I forget his name. Cigar, like Sagaar or something. That might be his first name. I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, I saw him posting that because he had reached out to CNN to be like, hey, can we stream that on our channels or whatever?
Like, heck no.
And they obviously said no for obvious reasons because it's literally
they
like CBS
sponsors.
Landing the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's a broadcast channel monetizing viewers with advertising to appease shareholders. It has nothing to do with like freedom of information and share. You know what I mean?
We're
like
one election cycle
so
away
crazy.
From having a halftime show.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's like they're promoting it like it's, you know, McGregor versus Mayweather.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways it is exactly the same because again, you're crossing over from like something that used to be a group of professionals having intellectual conversation that's now like been reduced to, like I said, verbal trial by combat.
And literally again, the cult of personality thing where it's like the piece, again, I didn't watch it because there was nothing either of them can say is going to surprise me at this point. And so the only way is to look at it from an entertainment perspective, but I don't want to feed into that beast. And so it's like, but the one piece everybody was talking about the next day was Trump and Biden got into a spat about whose golf handicap was lower. Yeah. That's what everybody was talking about. It wasn't policy. It wasn't that. It was literally like, oh, that was so badass that he said that.
Yeah,
did he believe he said that?
But I took two cognitive tests. I took physical exams every year. And, you know, we knock on wood wherever we may have wood, that I'm in very good health. I just won two club championships, not even senior, two regular club championships. To do that, you have to be quite smart and you have to be able to hit the ball a long way. And I do it. He doesn't do it. He can't hit a ball 50 yards. He challenged me to a golf match. He can't hit a ball 50 yards.
Look, I'd be happy to have a driving contest with him. I got my handicap, which when I was vice president, down to a 6. And by the way, I told you before, I'm happy to play golf if you carry your own bag. Think you can do it?
That's the biggest lie, that he's a 6 handicap of all.
I was an 8 handicap.
Yeah.
8?
Never.
But I have, you know how many? I've
seen you swing. I know you swing.
President Trump, we're going to turn.
Let's not act like children.
I'm not advocating for. We kind of joke. I joke that like we're now a halftime show next year, but it's like this show is brought to you by BetterHelp. It's a new year, which means it's time to write a new chapter of your life. And if you're someone like me, maybe the last couple of chapters have been a little bit rough here and there. Maybe it's time to finally experience a new plot twist, or maybe there's a part of your story you've been wanting to revise. Well, it's not going to happen just because you made a resolution that's going to fade by February. It's about picking up the pen and becoming the author of your own life. And I want to encourage you to think of therapy as your editorial partner, helping you write new chapters and create the meaningful story you deserve to live. Starting therapy with BetterHelp did just that for me. I was going through some of the biggest transition periods and toughest moments since starting this podcast, and having a therapist to bounce ideas off of and get the tools I need to live a better, more fulfilled life was so incredibly invaluable. It's not about just getting their system and their philosophy that you plug yourself into. It's about having an open dialogue and finding out what steps are best for you in your specific journey. I know my specific journey is extremely busy, and so that's why it's helpful that BetterHelp is fully online. It makes therapy affordable and convenient, and they serve over 5 million people worldwide. And the best part is they have over 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties to choose from, and you can easily switch therapists anytime at no extra cost. The first therapist I sat down with was not a good fit for me and my needs, and I went in the next day and scheduled an appointment with a different therapist who ended up being an absolute game changer for me. You can start writing your own story today with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/preacherboys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/preacherboys. Get 10% off your first month right now with BetterHelp. It's time to write your story.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
So far removed from any intellectual conversation happening,
right?
Where it's like there's nothing of substance,
nothing
here.
Substantive.
And, yeah. This is the clip I want to pull up because, yeah, I think again, I don't fully go hardcore like with Neil Postman's. Thank you, GoDaddy. With Neil Postman, I'm not like a hardcore because like he was very against a lot of technology in general. Like he had a lot of things I'm like hard agree on, like his takes on politics. The school system, on the way political discourse happen, but this kind of sums up like the insanity of like political debate at this point. Hey, he's on C-SPAN.
On C-SPAN, yeah.
I love C-SPAN. I will say this: when I was really following politics, the closest I've ever followed it, I watched almost everything on C-SPAN.
Yeah,
because there's no commentary.
Yeah, correct.
But anyway, it's
God bless C-SPAN. It should be,
When television does news, when it tries to do what Americans now call political debates. This cannot be taken seriously by an informed public. I mean, what is a debate? We have President Reagan and Vice President Mondale in front of the camera. And someone like Barbara Walters says, first question for you, Mr. President, is what do you think is the solution to the problem in the Middle East? You will have 2 minutes to answer, after which Vice President Mondale will have 60 seconds for rebuttal. Now, who can take that seriously? If Reagan and Mondale were serious men, in fact, they would turn to Ms. Walters and say, what kind of men do you think we are? We're running for the highest office in the land. You can't answer a question like this in 2 minutes. nor can you rebut someone else's answer in 60 seconds. Or they might turn to Miss Walters and say, what kind of people do you think the American public is that they will put up with a forum in which candidates for the presidency are asked to respond to a question like this in 2 minutes and or 1 minute. But in fact, none of that ever happens. Reagan does answer, and Mondale does give his rebuttal, and everyone goes on with this charade that television is informing the public. In fact, television, I would argue, is not. It's amusing the public, and that this is not a legitimate form of political discourse, but is taken right from the values of show business.
Well, it's the funny thing with it's a funny thing that with Bill Burr and Bill Maher recently when Bill Maher said something about the Middle East and like, oh, it's obvious, it's this, and Bill Burr's like, okay, on to the next one. How are you going to solve Russia and Ukraine? You solved it, Bill. And that's where I want to take it, because, like, again, I think this conversation...
Let's go to the next one.
There's a very simple solution to all this problem in the Middle East. Stop attacking Israel.
Hey, you just solved
attacking
it.
Israel.
You just
I
solved
did.
It.
I actually
there
did.
There you go. That's fantastic.
Anyway.
All right.
We don't need to get onto that.
Let's go to Russia and the Ukraine. How do you solve that one, Bill? Let me hear your hard-nosed decision about that.
This conversation can get lost, I think, in, so like... Good. The Trump Biden discourse, but like, I think it's so much bigger. And I think for our purposes, for those that are still sitting there going like, you know, get into religion, get into this. I think I see this happening in apologetics videos. I see this happening in and I think if you're looking even to like, say this show as like the core, like this is going to be the thing that informs me on what to think about this. It's like, you know, I would hope people listening when we reference something, not check out everything, but I would hope like when I mention Neil Postman, they're going like, let me check out his book and read what he said and not just rely on the soundbite of this. Or when, you know, we laugh when we see like the Charlie Kirk videos where he'll like talk very quickly about something and say, it's this and this and obviously this and this and this. And then there's a cool outro on it that says, follow the Daily Wire, America First or whatever
the title is. Charlie Kirk slams Democrat or whatever.
And it's like... Again, it's all this WWE style kind of discourse and it spreads into religion, politics, like, and then it's fueled on top of that by the algorithms that say like, you'll like this,
right?
You know, like I don't know. To me, it was just one of the things where like my biggest frustration is not really with Trump or Biden at this point, although I have my frustrations with both. Like my frustration was when I started, like I opened social media right after the debate and it was like, oh, you see what he said about golfing?
Yeah,
it's
like,
right. What? Like, this is the leader of our country.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I don't know. But anyway.
Yeah, well, I think that you can't extrapolate the crossover of religion and politics. Yeah. Like,
it is a religion at this point.
It just is. You know what I mean? The people that are most anti-religion that are like leftists, it's like, I mean, your political identity is your religion.
Yeah. You know, Who's our savior, literally.
Right. You vilify the other side as if they're the devil himself. You have sensationalist views about what would happen if the devil himself was, you know, to be elected or whatever. You vilify anybody in your life who thinks those things. You engage in identity politics to the nth degree, where anybody who like has an R next to their name, or anybody who has a D, like, you know, like if you have the D next to your name, then it's like, okay, well, we can be friends. And so you have an R next to your name, it's like, oh my gosh, like you're probably racist. And it's like, whoa.
I mean, it is what R stands for.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. But yeah, it's its own religion. And trying to separate the two of them is next to impossible. And you know, so when we talk about it on the show, it's more just like, again, our purpose is not, that's why we're not talking about like, oh, I voted for this person or you voted for this person, or I'm a part of this party or you're a part of that party or whatever, because like none of that really matters. It's just up. Like the idea of the show is to convince you that's listening to stop just outsourcing all of the thinking to to a political party that you like or something, or a character or a person.
Just don't
that
outsource
you trust
your thinking to anybody.
Yeah. Like,
don't outsource that.
Like, engage in it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Don't outsource. And especially don't come with a strong opinion about something when you've outsourced all of your thinking. Yeah. Those are the people that crack me up the most, where it's like, I have this really, really strong opinion about this and everybody else is wrong, and not just wrong, but immoral if they disagree with me. And it's like, how did you come to that conclusion? It's like, well, because so-and-so told me to. It's like, whoa, what? Like, you're holding to this other person's opinion that strongly? You've never thought through it? Yeah. This is a problem.
Well, it's one of the things, like, there's... with some current issues, you know, well, the Israel, I mean, Israel, Palestine, like, or the Russia, Ukraine thing, there's things that I am 100% against. Like, for me, loss of life in any context is terrible. Like, and unnecessary loss of life, which I think all is unnecessary at the end of the day. But when you have unnecessary loss of life or innocent civilians being killed, regardless of their country, that really bothers me. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the actual, like, take Israel and Palestine, for example, like, when you look at the actual, like, who has the right to this strip of land? I don't know.
Yeah.
And legitimately, like, that's something that's been debated since like the 40s, the 30s, like thousands of years before
literally
that.
Thousands of years. Yeah.
But it's like, again, two things can be true and there can be nuance to say, like, someone was mentioning it to me the other day and I literally said, who are like the top three leaders of Palestine and Israel? Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, I know Netanyahu for Israel. I was like, who else? And they're like, and I was like, okay, so you probably don't know enough to write a social media post about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, can you say, hey, let's not bomb civilians? Yes. Because right. that's a pretty blanket obvious thing. Yeah. But it's like, when you start getting into debates about like, well, this, did you know that this, this battle in this year happened? It's like, do you know anything about that? Or just read that happened one time, you know? So
I was somewhere recently at like a bar or something. And somebody literally asked me my opinion on Israel, Palestine. Yeah. That's pretty much what I did. I was just like, I don't have an opinion. You know why? Because I don't know enough about that topic and I'm not just going to start like word vomiting onto you based on a political party's ideal outcome. Yeah. That I don't even know if I agree with because I don't know anything about it.
And again, can you give that in 60 seconds and give a real answer? You know, like we could sit and talk about issues. We're talking about healthcare before this, like briefly just like mentioning it.
Yeah.
But it's like, I couldn't 100% give you a breakdown of which country's healthcare system's the best. Mm-hmm. I can say from like seeing videos from different countries or knowing some people from Canada that talk about it or whatever.
Anecdotal evidence.
But it's like at the end of the day, people who've studied for decades have expansive theories that have never been put to the test that sound better on paper. Like, it's complicated.
Yeah.
And again, with religion, it's the same thing. It's like, we can sit here all day and you can ask like, what do you think about when Mark says this in the Bible? It's like, scholars debate whether that was written by Mark.
Right.
Like, people debate whether that was even supposed to be included in the canon of scripture. Like we have to really step back and like admit what do we know and not just regurgitate the talking points.
Yeah.
And that kind of leads to the question I want to ask is like, and I think this is a question that people are like Jonathan, is it Haidt or Haidt?
I think Haidt.
I've been watching a lot of his content lately. And want to read his book, The Anxious Generation, but he's really talking about the dangers of social media, and I'm echoing a lot of what I'm hearing him say. But you know, the idea of how do we consume things in a responsible way? Like how do we consume information in a responsible or objective way? What have you guys done in terms of like consuming information to not be a mindless consumer or to outsource thinking? I was curious what your takes were.
I think from everything you're saying too, something I was going to say is I think this is something that I've struggled with, I think the most, and I've realized the most with leaving religion is I think it's so much, again, all of it doesn't give you your own thoughts about anything. Like, I feel like that's the biggest thing I've took away from the first 25 years of my life was like, I never thought for myself because I was always like told what to think. And I never like even had the opportunity to do that. And I think that's why I've seen
reference the rule book.
Exactly. Always. Yeah. And I would just always reference, you know, whoever said it or whatever. And I never actually, and that's what we've talked about a lot. When you first started getting out of it, that's what was the biggest, like, aha moment for me. It was like, oh, I actually don't know any of that. Yeah. I think that's why so many people too jump from one religion to another religion or from one cult to another cult, is because there's so much safety in that too. Yeah. That to take yourself out of that like religion or that culture and actually think for yourself, as opposed to just go to the next thing that makes more sense at that time, is extremely dangerous. And I think that I've seen a lot of people do that. And something that I, again, why I think I took a lot of time to just not have an opinion about any of it for a little bit because of that. But again, like you reiterating what you said, too, of just like not taking, obviously the show is called Figuring Out for a Reason. We don't have the answers. And I think, but also being okay with that was something that took me a long time to get to.
Yeah.
Just being okay with the fact that I don't have the answers.
So I'm like,
but
who's going to hold my brain now?
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. And I think for me, it's been just going to the complete opposite of what I actually think about something and like going to something that gives me the complete opposite opinion on it and listening to their actual opinion. And again, most of the time it doesn't change my opinion to that complete opposite side of it. But that has given me at least empathy on that side and at least understanding on that side, instead of just only having my argument on my side of something. So just finding the outlet that gives me the complete opposite of what I'm thinking about it changes my opinion a lot on stuff. That's what I've tried to do.
And maybe you end up in the middle of those two extremes.
Exactly.
Which is usually the healthiest place.
Like, yeah. Right. Which I feel like has brought in also my friendships and my community on all those sides. Because when you can actually come into a conversation wanting to hear the other side again, and not wanting the idea that hearing the other side to change their opinion to your side or hearing the other side to change for them to change your opinion to their side, just hearing people out, just understanding people's like thoughts and processes and all those things, I think are just extremely helpful in expanding your community, expanding your group of friendships on that side. I mean, we talk about that even here. Like, we all have different opinions on things, and that's a good thing. And I appreciate that.
I wish people understood how different, because we always say it and I feel like people always say it. I'm like, I wish people, because like, it's so funny. Like when I talk to people and they're like, oh, you know, oh, you work with Chuck, so you probably think all this and this, and he thinks that. And I'm like,
no,
we don't agree on a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say, I would say, not like 90%, but I'd say like 50% maybe of like
politically.
If we get into politics,
we don't align a lot of things on politics.
Yeah.
What? I'm just kidding. No, but really, like, I'm like, I'm not politically in like, even, and that's why we joke. I told Jackie the other day, I was watching the clip from Chris Williamson. Yeah. I was like, I don't know how Travis listens to these. I was like, I was watching one of the, it was just one of the episodes, but I was like, I'm just like, this is not what I listen to. Like, it's just such a different perspective.
Because the topic of conversation isn't as interesting to you.
I think, and again, it's one of the things, like, I appreciate after I watched it because of what you said. It's the perspective is different, but it's like the premise of I don't want to derail into the topic, but like the premise that he was suggesting and his guest was suggesting in that particular episode was so counter to the perspective that I'm even like the foundational view of what's happening and what they were dissecting. I was like, I don't even think they're right about the premise.
Okay, gotcha.
And so like, but it was one of those things that like watching it and hearing that premise expounded on was interesting, because I'm like, even this, which is like a baseline topic that we like, it just proved to me, I was like, we can have completely different definitions of the words we're using in the conversation.
Yeah.
And, but I say that to say, like, I've taken value watching content that you watch or you recommend. And it's because, and it's not because, oh, I just, oh, it converted me and I switched my mind.
Right.
But again, I can end up in the middle and go like, hey, everybody that voted this way is not a racist.
Right.
Or everyone that voted this way or believes this way. Like the movie I know I'm going on a tangent, but the movie I just watched last night, I spent 80 minutes with a character on screen who believes very different religiously than I do and ever have. But the story worked up emotionally, this connection to go like, I'm sitting there in awe of her steadfastness in her faith. And like, that was a really interesting thing to sit in when I'm going, I don't know what religious faith I even have, but there's something in my humanity that resonates with this pursuit of having this belief you're willing to literally go to your death for.
Yeah.
Like, there's beauty in that. And also like, these other layers of like, well, nobody should have to die because
it, right.
But there is this, I love that complicated feeling. And I feel like that's something for most people, it is like, well, that was dumb.
Just
say you don't believe,
Yeah.
you know, like just, you know, just recant, you know, or some people would say, of course you should die for that. Or of course the church should have executed someone for that. Or we should go back, you know, like, and to live in this messiness of like, I understand the fears driving the church and I understand the, you know, the steadfastness driving her and how those push against each other or the political climate. I understand people that are getting taxed to death that are terrified of more taxes or whatever it is, like that messy middle is kind of a good home. Yeah. I feel like,
I think that's, where a lot of the most people that I know that have held to like one side or the other, whether it's politics, religion, some like ideological belief system that have purposefully like made friends with people not based on those things, mm-hmm. almost all of them end up in the middle somewhere, you know, like a lot of my friend, like, cause you know, I've been doing what I've been doing for 7 years now. So a lot of the people that I met when,
in terms of
like podcasting, entrepreneurship, like being,
sinning,
like being out.
Yeah. I was like, in terms of like being a sinner,
just being outside of the world that I grew up in, even not just the religious perspective, but also the political perspective,
building your life basically.
Yes. Yeah. Correct. Just anybody who like held different beliefs than I did, because like growing up the way that we grew up, it was like, I didn't meet a millionaire until I was gone, but I also didn't meet a Democrat until I was gone. You know what I mean? It's like you,
that's crazy.
Like when you grow up that way, that's just how it is. And so like when we were younger and I was meeting people who were also younger, it was like, you know, I was 23, 24 mm-hmm. and I would meet people that are 23, 24 and they were far left. And I was they were coming from a far left environment. I was coming from a far right environment and we'd talk. And initially like we butted heads a lot and we just decided we're not talking about these things because we both have these strongly held belief systems that are diametrically opposed. And if we talk about it, we're just not going to be friends anymore. No. Let's talk about the things that we have in common. And then like a few years went by and we're like in our late 20s, you know, at this point and, you know, something gets brought up and it's like, oh, we actually align on like more than half of the things that we used to not align on because like they've come a little bit over here and I've come a little bit over here because we're engaging with people that have over here. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, but if you only ever engage with people that are here, of course you're never going to consider anything else as being potentially true or like that something that you're thinking or believing is potentially not true because you're just getting more and more and more and more and more of the same.
Yeah. Well, and how many relationships do we just completely abort that are that become deep friendships in 6 years because we've allowed our
ideas to collide
or our idealism to be our separator, you know, like our this aggressive, like, well, I know he voted for like people legitimately ended relationships with family because they voted for Trump.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
On both sides. Like people were like, you don't vote for Trump. I'm not going to go to your dinner, you know, and vice versa. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Lifelong friendships
that
were
is
ruined.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's that idea too, where it's like, well, why would I go listen to that person? They're dumb. You know what I mean? That's what I hear people say that stuff all the time. Like, you know, well, they're just a moron or they're just dumb or they're just stupid. Like how dumb can you be or whatever? And it's like, okay, but Sam Harris objectively is not a dumb person. You know what I mean? Like
everybody
Chris
has
Williamson. Like he's not a dumb person.
Tim everybody Ferris, not has a dumb person. Takes.
Like, correct. Like we all blind spots.
So don't listen to them on that topic.
But like, that doesn't mean that they're not smart. Like Ben Shapiro. Intellectual person, very smart guy. Like there's smart people but that's kind of my whole point is like, there's smart people everywhere and there's smart people that believe in creation and there's smart people that believe in evolution and there's smart people that believe that are on the left. There's smart people that are on the right. Like there's a lot of really intelligent, smart people who've been through the ringer in life, who have great life experiences, a depth of knowledge, a lot of wisdom, and they have opinions and beliefs that are opposed to each other. If that's the case, then there clearly isn't just like one absolute definition of truth, or else everybody that's smart would end up on the same page at some point and they just don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, how can you like, if you're not even the one doing all of that, like you're sitting there, you know, like doing whatever your job is. And that's the one thing that you know really well. And then you're talking about how you're going to fix America's healthcare system or whatever. And it's like these morons up here trying to do this, like they just need to do this and then it'd be done. Yeah. You know? And it's like, whoa, wait a second. Yeah. Wait a second.
It's not a switch.
Like, you've spent zero hours dedicated to like, you know, social healthcare or government spending, and like, you know, you're good at what you do, but that would be like that person coming in and telling you how to do your job. Like, you'd be like, wait a second, I'm the one that is, you know, knows everything about whatever marketing or sales, or like, I'm the one that knows everything about planting the seeds to grow at this time because I'm an agriculture major and I'm a farmer for a living, you know. It's like, but you're going to try to tell them like how to, you know, make the, to solve the war in Ukraine. It's like, what's like, what are we doing here? Like, you have such strong opinions that aren't based in anything other than somebody that you perceive smarter than you told you that that's how it is. And so you're just like, well, this is what we believe in, this identity that I've accepted. Therefore we're right and you're wrong, you know? And if you're wrong, I don't want to hang out with you because you're wrong about that.
Right.
And it's like, my goodness, like how many people are you just like writing off?
Yeah.
You know, how many awesome potential friendships, like some of our closest friends now are people that like we a few years ago would have been completely diametrically opposed to in a multitude of ways. But now they're like, and again, like you said, it also like helps the relationship come together more when you've been honest with each other, when you've been honest with each other and you've risked being changed by other people.
Yeah.
And like, it's scary to risk being changed, but it's also like really rewarding, fulfilling, and it only helps fuel the closeness and intimacy of the relationships that you have.
Right.
And you're missing out on that stuff when you just like say no to all of it.
And you risk the relationship by sharing your opinion in a form, like, cause that's the thing ultimately, like, well, like for us, like we've all had conversations about things that we disagree on. And I think in pretty good ways to where when I think about 5 years from now relationship, like I think we'll probably still have a relationship because I know we've already talked through heavy stuff in the past. And I feel like with a lot of relationships, like new ones, it's like such a landmine,
so superficial
or minefield where it's like, okay, well, I better not jump into politics, or I better
better not tell them who I voted for.
And it's like, it builds confidence in the relationship when like we know pretty much what we believe individually about all these different things. So I'm just like, what's going to be the thing that's going to fracture? If those things didn't, like we're probably going to be good in 5-10 years. Like I'm good committing more to this relationship, you know? And I think it's the same in a marriage too. It's like, if you have things like, we just don't talk about this, and it's like, well, that's going to be the thing that screws you up in 10 years.
For sure.
I think the big three things that kind of I'm walking away from this discussion with, and I hope people walk away with, is not to use like commentary as your main source of information. Like I think we talk about all these people and I think there's value in them, but I think, seeking out the original stuff. But on the flip side of that, number two is like, you don't have to be an expert in everything. Like politics, for example, you don't need to know, like, there's some things
like where you don't like, need to have an opinion on it.
If you're an entrepreneur trying to build a business, like you might not need to be a full-time follower of the political system.
Correct.
You might need to in your local politics,
more distracting, if
you're building a building or something. But, and then the last thing is just, and I think this is the one that I really have pulled away from stuff, is like separating emotionalism from the education side, or from the entertainment side, and then from the, like just being outraged. Like, when I say emotion, I mean outrage, and I mean just pure excitement about something. And because I think a lot of times we hear words in a context of music or production or, you know, there's a great example. I was watching a movie last night with Steve Martin called Leap of Faith, and he plays a televangelist or a prosperity preacher. And it's very funny because they literally show before the event all the planning of like, they're passing notes to me, like, this person here is, you know, pregnant, but their mom doesn't know. This person here is struggling with the issue with their neighbor. Like, and so he's got an earpiece in and they're like, they're like, okay, put the fog on. Okay. And then they have plants in the audience jumping up, starting the amens. And like, it's all the emotional manipulation, and the stuff he's saying in that context sounds so convincing and so brilliant and past the plates.
And the person in the audience is going, how could he know that?
And, but if you took what he said and removed all the music, all the lights, all the things, it's so clearly a scam. And I think when it comes to politics, religion, content creators, like if you literally read the transcription of what they're telling you, it makes no sense, but it's been buttoned with an intro and outro and It's been given a little extra emotional fluff or a story to add, you know, to tag on it. And so I think if people could step away and go, let me consume information like Neil Postman recommends in a written form or in a form that's, you know, removed from the entertainment space, I think they're going to be in a lot better space.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Yeah. My thing was basically kind of what you said. When it comes to politics specifically, I read The 4-Hour Workweek from Tim Ferriss, one of the first business books I ever read, probably close to a decade ago now. And since then, like I think really it was just like somebody giving me permission to stay out of it. You know what I mean? Where, cause you feel like as a citizen, you just feel kind of this like sense of responsibility to be informed about the topics.
Especially with social media. Cause there's literally trending topics and I need to be in that conversation.
Right. You know? So he, after reading that book, that was like the first time that somebody was just like, hey, stop watching the news. Like, not only is it like acceptable, it's actually recommended. If you're going to build a business, if you're going to do anything extraordinary, you cannot allow yourself to be bogged down by negativity. And the news is like 78% negative headlines, because they know that's what sells. And it's built to make you outraged. It's built to elicit a negative emotional response. And if you allow those things into your world, then you're leaving your emotional state up to some publisher in a, you know, shareholder optimized, you know, corporate, you know, just clusterfuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like you're taking away so much of your own control over your emotional state, which has a lot to do with your productivity, which has a lot to do with your ability to get things done. So I think that was the first thing for me, is that like, you don't have to consume all the information. You know what I mean? You don't have to sit there. You don't owe anybody that, you know, especially if you want to do anything big in the world, like you're going to have to gate what you allow in your mind. And so that's one thing that's been really helpful for me. Then the other thing is just following people from the other side. Cause before that it would have been like, I'm only following people that I agree with. And so if you're going to engage in the overarching discussion, then it's helpful and valuable, I think, to listen to both sides, even if like you put it on and your initial emotional reaction is just like, oh, like screw this guy. You know, like
instead of going, so dumb. Why are they saying this?
Right. Yeah. Just allow yourself to take in what they're saying and then move on to a different thing. But again, that's why I just decided not to do it. Cause again, I would just find myself like trying to engage in both sides and then just like being outraged and being upset. Yeah. And then being, you know, I was just like, why am I even doing this?
You gotta guard your heart.
You really do got to control the inputs that come. That's why like the majority of my media consumption is typically like comedies and stuff that puts me in a lighthearted, funny, you know, happy mood.
And then when you need to plug in, it's a book or longer format or bigger.
Sure.
I think the varied perspectives is great. I mean, even in the financial realm, like we talk about, you know, you have the guys that are like, debt is great. Debt is this. Right. Debt, you know, the Grant Cardones of the world.
Yeah, you have the Grant Cardone and the Dave Ramsey like kind of opposition.
And there's a lot of people that go like, Dave Ramsey, our good friend Sam Noliano, Dave Ramsey is a moron, this.
Yeah.
And you know, and in his lane for what he's doing, sure. That's like there's that.
Yeah.
He's going to say that.
Grant if you're Grant, say, you're got it. You have you to have vilify. To
say, and
Ramsey.
If you're Dave Ramsey, you're Ramsey, have to say
vilify
that.
Grant.
Yeah. And but I really loved in your interview with Gary Cusin from Cusin.
Cusin, yeah.
I loved your interview with Gary Cusin, who was a co-founder of GameStop. He talks about going through this horrific bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And he's like, I will never again. And I'm like, there's so much value in that perspective because that's a part that the Grant Cardones don't tell you about,
right? Yeah.
You know, and so, but
cause listening, like, cause he didn't just have like a $2 million landscaping business.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's like I have a multi-billion dollar company, like,
owned a lot of shares in a publicly traded company that everybody listening to this knows and has probably shopped at, you know,
I've lost a lot of money to Gary.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
To GameStop.
And then, yeah. So for him to come out of that and be like, yeah, I'm never borrowing on margin. I'm never using.
He's not an idiot.
I'm never. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
It's not like you don't understand finances, Gary. Let me tell you.
Exactly. You know, he's a Harvard MBA.
Right.
He built that company and then he built, I always forget the name of his cosmetic company, but built a, no.
Yeah.
Laura Mercier.
Oh.
No, I think it was Laura Mercier or something like that.
He worked with Mac for a while.
Yeah, yeah. He was consulting or something and then led to him starting his own cosmetics brand, which he sold to Neiman Marcus for a lot of money. And then got hired as the CEO of Kinko's, turned that company around. Within 4 years, they exited for $2.5 billion to FedEx. So he's pretty smart guy, you know, and like, you know what I mean? But like that's an example of somebody who came in with one perspective and then had a crazy life experience happen to him and walked out of it with a fresh perspective. And so it's like, well, I'm never doing that again. Cause that was really painful. But now I can take those lessons and put them into the next part of my life, you know?
So, for anybody listening, or did you want to, for anybody listening, I'm curious to know how you consume information more intelligently. And I'll just end by saying, don't let us be your only source of information.
True.
So, especially not us. Like if you're going to follow someone as your guru,
probably
not here.
Yes.
I just spewed magic mind over the floor and gave you life advice. So probably not a good idea, but anyway, well, thanks, guys, for I got to talk about silent movies and a 1985 book about culture. Thank you for staying awake. Thank you, Magic Mind, for helping that and that nitro cold brew.
Thank you for listening to the Figuring It Out podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. For more information about the show, visit www.figuringitout.tv or connect with us anywhere on social media with the handle figuringitout.tv.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.